Welcome to episode number 27 of The Oral Fix. I'm Henry Diaz.
I'm Drew Brown.
Your hosts for this week's Oral Fix. Oral Fix is a social weekly commentary podcast for the gay community. We can be listened to on iTunes, Stitcher.com, Podomatic, SoundCloud.com, and also on our Facebook page, if you care to like it. It's at facebook.com/theoralfixpodcast.com. If you are using RSS to plug in your podcasts to your mobile apps or applications, desktop applications, our feed URL is feeds.feedburner.com/oralfixpodcast. Drew, how are you this week? What's new?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm feeling better, and I'm starting to have a more positive outlook on life compared to our last episode where Mercury went all hell on us with our computer gadgets. I think I mentioned in the previous podcast that I started getting donations when I started putting out an alert, and we've gotten several donations, and thank you very much. I would like to make a shout out to some people, some of our friends, Aisha, Letitia also donated, my friend Frank donated, some other friends of mine who wish to remain anonymous. So you know who you are. I know you're listening. Thank you very much for your donation and for your support. And I think that, you know, like I said in our previous podcast, you know, even just $1, if you can afford that, we'll be appreciating that so much. The little that we did receive has come a long way. It's put our podcast life expectancy, at least for another 2 months, forward and into the future. So thank you very much. And for those who can donate, please use that PayPal or Google checkout widgets on our blog, www.oralfixpodcast.com. That's also another place where you can download our podcast and listen to it. We've made new changes, which I'm really excited about, to our website. We put a new wallpaper background, which kind of looks like Christmas lights. Do you like it, Drew?
Yeah, it looks good.
How's your computer doing, by the way?
I'm getting it fixed this weekend, so hopefully someone's looking at it this weekend, so hopefully it'll be good.
Good. I'm knocking on wood here. I'm sure everyone else is also. Anything else new going on with you, or?
Just getting ready for the holidays.
You know, I overheard you and Letitia speaking last week before you started recording that you're kind of seeing somebody. Is that true?
It's not a label of us seeing each other. We care about each other. It's the same person I've, you know, mentioned on other podcasts. Same guy.
Yeah, tall man?
Really, yes.
Oh, okay.
So he's still around, so we're still trying to make it work.
Well, I wish you all the luck. All the best. Okay, well, moving on to our delicious new interview. Drew actually spotted this guy. His name is, he's a photographer. His name is Michael Sharkey, and he's an award-winning photographer, and also who's been featured, which we're going to be talking about mostly on this show. He's been featured in the New York Times, and his work that he's been doing lately is photographing. Well, actually, he started in 2006, and he's still doing this strongly. He's going around wherever he's at, and here in the United States so far, photographing, documenting the lives of queer youth. And the project is called Queer Kids. If you go to his website, www.msharkey.com, we'll have that linked to our show notes, you'll see these stunning photographs of not only, you know, the young people that he's taken photos of, but also musicians, actors, artists in general. You know, he has, like, Peter Bjorn and Adele in there, and I'm just going to stop at that because that's just only the tip of the iceberg. So, without further ado, here is our interview with Michael Sharkey.
Okay, well, we're here with award-winning photographer Michael Sharkey. And Michael, before we get into your photo series, Queer Kids, can we just have a little moment to talk about bacon and champagne? Are you a bacon and champagne lover as well?
I mean, those are definitely two of my most favorite things in the world.
Okay.
I
Now,
actually
are you like
I prefer bourbon to champagne, so it's more bacon and bourbon for me, but
Okay. But you're a bacon lover.
I love bacon.
Wait,
Are you
is this
do you have like a...
is this something inherently, like since you were little?
I mean, I don't think I'm in a minority when I say that, I love all kinds of pork products. I like pork belly, I like pork roast, I like pulled pork, barbecued pork, ribs, bacon, anything basically, even a, innocent, cute baby pig to me is delicious.
Okay. Well, you know that there's like all kinds. There's also a line of bacon products. Like there's bacon beer. I do believe that there is some type of like bacon scent.
Yeah,
And there's also
bacon chocolate.
Henry. When Henry did a blog post about there's also bacon lube.
I don't know about the bacon lube. That sounds a little sketchy. I would have bacon ice cream probably before I would have bacon lube.
Oh, bacon, yeah, bacon ice cream. I don't know about that.
Well, I wouldn't mind my pork being pulled, that's for sure. Wait. So we're talking about bacon and stuff, and you're not in the minority, in I guess the American population of pork here. Where in the United States are you from, or if you are from the United States?
I am an American. I was born here in New York City, but I grew up in Colorado, in a little town outside of Denver called Golden. Some of you
Okay.
might know Golden as the home of Coors Brewing Company, and that's where I grew up. And then when I went to school, I came back east and went to college in Vermont, a tiny little liberal arts college in the southern of Vermont. And right after I graduated, I moved to New York City.
Michael, you have a successful career as a photographer. What made you decide to focus on a gay youth?
Well, by trade, I shoot celebrities mostly. And when I say celebrities, I mean personalities across the cultural spectrum. I shoot fine artists and architects and actors and musicians and designers. And so there's a kind of I guess the best way to describe it is that it's a star-making sort of thing that happens when you are shooting celebrities. And you're trying to show them in the most positive light, in the most flattering way possible, and to be beautiful and glamorous and all the things that we associate with celebrity in culture. And I realized at some point, I guess it was about 6 years ago, that it might be interesting to bring that kind of image making to this particular demographic. And I think it was an interesting marriage because there's definitely a level of artifice in my documents, in this particular project, the Queer Kids project. And I think it really works for them because I think kids, they love celebrity and they love media. And I think that today they're more sort of conscious of their image in culture than they ever have been in the past. I mean, teens have definitely played a big part in popular culture for many decades now, ever since maybe, the dawn of rock and roll. But they've gotten to a point now in their sort of sophistication of representing themselves that, you know, they push the sort of it's a certain kind of like artifice in image making.
What have you learned from the young people in your series Queer Kids? What have you learned from them or taken away from them?
I mean, it's such an incredible group of people. They, you know, obviously they have a lot of courage to sort of step up and be photographed and interviewed. And to be out and proud at such a young age is really sort of so admirable in my mind. I had a really tough time. I was very not aggressive about my sexuality, but I definitely felt I don't know what the right word is. There was a certain level of antagonism that existed in my youth. I was a little bit I don't want to say like I was an anarchist, but I was definitely sort of pushing boundaries as a kid, and I was trying to push some gender boundaries. And this is many years ago. This was in the 80s that I sort of came of age, it was a terrifying time because you really were out there alone. There were so few role models that were out in culture. Everything was sort of under the radar, and there was always the possibility that you would be like ruined or crushed or just like destroyed for your sexuality. So there was always the threat of like destruction. And that was a lot of anxiety to live with. And it was this huge burden because I wanted to be out and free, but I also knew that there was always the chance that whatever I wanted or had would be taken away from me because of my sexuality. So I think that, you know, seeing the kids today, obviously, you know, we've come a long way just in the past couple of decades, and to see them stand up proud and fearless is really inspirational. I love the kids. They're amazing.
Do you think that we have the same the same issues as when you were growing up?
There definitely I would say that it's not even specific to queer youth. It's sort of just a youth thing. When you're a teenager, the world is just completely new and bizarre, and you're dealing with, you know, personal relationships at an adult level. And these kids are also, I would say, sort of functioning at an adult level at an earlier age. And their sexuality is a part of that. And I think that, you know, it's a very confusing time to be a teenager. And then to be a gay teenager is doubly confusing, perhaps, because there still is a lot of conflicting ideas and attitudes about homosexuality in the culture. Today, I think we can be thankful that there is a number of outlets for these kids to turn to that offer a lot of support and guidance and acceptance, and that abundance certainly did not exist when I was a teenager. We're definitely making some good progress, I think. And I think that this project in particular, raising sort of the consciousness of the kids in the eyes of the nation, is important also. Just to put a face on the kids. I think you can talk about queer kids, you can talk about homosexuality, but if you don't actually see the people and hear them talk and sort of understand that they're real people just like all of us, it's hard to humanize them when you are thinking of them abstractly. So for me, like, the motivation for the project really was to put a face, you know, to this group.
Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts on the growing trend of the bullying and the, you know, we've lost a lot of young people who have suicide and in schools and being bullied and all the stuff that's happening?
I think that that's probably always existed. I think that it's great that the media is paying attention to it now for the first time. I think it's, you know, it's a shame that it's taken so long, and you know, it's a real problem that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a new problem. I think that that's always existed. I mean, I had some of that to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought, I mean, when you were growing up, did you ever think of suicide, or did you just kind of like push through it, or?
Yeah, I don't know if I was ever like really suicidal, but I definitely, you know, also being gay, I think, you know, we have a tendency to be dramatic and theatrical. and a little, you know, overwrought. But what is the question exactly? Suicidal? I don't think I ever really felt suicidal. I may have like threatened, or you know, you sort of think about, I think everyone thinks about it a little bit.
Yeah.
Thinking about it and then actually like going through with it are two different things for sure.
Were you bullied when you were a kid at all for being gay?
Yeah.
Or are people suspecting it? You know, like some people, you know, like I know some of my taunters when I was growing up, they were quite effeminate themselves. So it's like, you know, most bullies are that what they bully.
For sure. They, so, they are seeing a mirror of themselves that they can't sort of deal with. I know. I went to a very small school, and it was sort of in the foothills, and it was a very insular community, and I also excelled academically, and I had a lot of friends, and I think that, you know, being smart and popular helps to not be bullied.
Sure.
And then, yeah, and then also having a lot of confidence. I had a lot of confidence as a kid. I was very sure of myself. When I look back at photographs and even there's some video that exists, I definitely see a very effeminate child. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of children are, you know, can sort of maybe be characterized in that way, and it's not terribly unusual. I have to think that my parents must have known, but I don't think that they really did. I don't really know how to explain that. I mean, I think we've become much more savvy when it comes to recognizing homosexuality in people. And so maybe that has something to do with it. But, I mean, when I see little kids today, I can kind of maybe guess if they're gay or not.
Who was the first person you came out to?
Who was the first person I came out to? That's a good question. It must have been my friends. I mean, I had a boyfriend from as early as 15 years old.
Oh, you sounded young. You were fresh.
Yeah, I had a...
Well, I came out at 16.
I'm 40. I'm 40 now. I was born in 1971, so this is 19.
That's not too, you know... Oh, that is very young for your era.
I mean, I'm not that old.
Sorry.
Okay, so then let's see. Wait, 15, so that would be 86. I was in 9th or 10th grade. I had a couple of boyfriends. My first boyfriend was named Grant, and he had a car. He was a year older than me, and he had, like, this convertible, like, red sports car.
Cool.
That didn't last very long, but I had a huge crush on him, and I remember, like, getting caught making out on his parents' couch by his mom, who happened to be the librarian at my school. Yeah. Then I had another boyfriend, Alan Chavez. I wonder what happened to him. He was, like, the gayest, like, gay dude that has ever lived. He was so gay. He was like Karl Lagerfeld levels of gay.
Yep. Okay. We see how you roll.
Did he have a fan and everything?
A fan? He might as well have. He like filed, he was a death rocker, and he filed his fingernails to points and painted them black and wore like blue lipstick and eyeliner and had like long bleach blonde bangs, and he was kind of fabulous. I would love to get in touch with him. I don't know where he went.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, that's the beauty of social media now. You can look them up on Facebook.
I have a couple of times, but there are those people that just don't exist on Facebook. I don't understand how that's possible, but I've never been able to track them down.
Before we move on from the first half of the show, just one question back to Queer Kids. I know you've been doing this since 2010.
No, 2006.
2006. Oh, I'm sorry. Ooh.
I started in the spring of 2006.
And my next question is, it looks like, well, from the one video that I saw and some of the pictures I've seen on your website, these kids are not really from New York City.
They're all over the country, yeah. I mean, I travel specifically to shoot them, and then occasionally if I'm traveling on other assignments, I'll try to squeeze in a queer kid shoot. Over the course of the past 5.5 years, I've shot in at least half a dozen different states, maybe more.
Do you keep in touch with them, or do they keep in touch with you and follow you on Facebook?
I do. Some of them I keep in very close touch with. A couple of them, Jonathan and Patrick, actually came over for dinner last night. And yeah, no, I definitely keep in touch with them and try to follow. I mean, it's a hope of mine that I'll be able to revisit them as subjects at some future date.
Okay. What do you want folks to walk away from Queer Kids? Like, whoever, the gay community, or also, straight community, or whoever.
I want you to take whatever you want to take away from it. My primary concern as a photographer is to create a compelling portrait that's beautiful and powerful and well made. And I think that there's a lot of elements that go into creating an interesting photograph. I think of this project as a historical document, and it's one that I hope, has a long, long shelf life, and that people will come back and look at the images many, many years from now and see the beginning of a kind of revolution. And that, there'll be these beautiful photographs to sort of illustrate what was taking place in the culture in the beginning of the 21st century. So yeah, I mean, I think that they function on a number of different levels, and in terms of politics, it's hard to sort of guide that. You really just want to make as interesting an image as possible and hope that it functions at its highest level within the culture.
Mm-hmm. Do you think gay culture is dead? We talked about this on our earlier episode of one of our podcasts, where Bruce LaBruce did this whole article saying that, gay culture is dead. You had Elton John now talking about, being a daddy and, basically the sexist kind of, and the dirtiness of the community. It's just kind of gone away, and like now everyone is more like PG. Do you feel like gay culture is dead, or do you see that?
No, not at all. I mean, there's definitely some great bastions of gay culture that still exist. John Waters. I mean, how amazing is John Waters?
He's
incredible. Also, I saw on your website that you were publicizing the release of A Gem in the Holograms.
Truly outrageous.
which leads me to believe that maybe you're familiar with Jizz.
Oh my God, yes. I've been...
Jizz!
wait, are you the voice of Jizz?
When I do that, people think that I am. But the reason I'm able to do it so well is because I try to watch it on a daily basis. It's one of the most entertaining things I think that's ever been made. And I mean, that's a really good example of gay culture at its finest right now, I think.
Yeah.
And those kinds of like internet memes that are so wildly offensive and irreverent are brilliant, I think. So I think that there's a lot of really great examples of gay culture. It definitely has evolved, and there's aspects of the culture that perhaps are now relegated to history. But that's you could say the same about any part of culture, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
I mean, that's why those were our sentiments as well, and we felt the same way. Dimensions by Tigga, and that was the Bloody Beat remix. So the first part, you got to hear a lot about the Michael Sharpe's project Queer Kids, and you also got to hear about his love for bacon and my love for champagne and his love for bourbon, which anyone who loves bacon is a BFF in my book. Now we're going to hear the second part of the interview, where you would also get to know a little bit more about the project as well as about the man behind the lens. Here is part two of the interview. What inspires you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, my inspiration comes from so many different places. I really feel, you know, tirelessly and insatiably hungry for all different kinds of culture. I mean, I love film. I've been a very close watcher of contemporary art in the city for the past, you know, decade and a half. I do a lot of traveling, and that's always inspirational. I read, which is something that's become increasingly rare, maybe. I find my inspiration from all different places. I think that there's so many great things. I mean, New York City is the greatest city in the world, I think, and you really can find anything, any kind of interest that you might have or subject that you want to pursue, you will find its most sort of complete and interesting manifestation here in the city.
Truly so. A lot of great art museums also.
Yep.
Besides people watching and things like that.
Yeah.
I know for myself as a photographer, I'm really into watching people and just stopping anywhere whenever I'm in the city, or actually when I was growing up, you know, I'll just stop at some corner somewhere that I've been walking through and just observe for like about a good hour, you know, what are people doing, you know, how they're interacting, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, this is definitely a city for people watching.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and I live right across from the park, as you know, and I'll just walk over there and sit on the bench and watch people for many minutes. And
well, hopefully you haven't passed me. I haven't passed you, and you were like, "What was he thinking, wearing that?"
Well, I'm gonna keep my eye out now.
Michael, if you had a theme song, what would it be?
Oh gosh, that's a really tough one.
You can have several. You can have several.
A theme song, my gosh, I don't even know. I don't know. It really would depend on my mood. Today,
good answer.
Today in New York City, it's sort of gloomy and wet, but I have to say it's beautiful. It's so romantic and you know, it's kind of balmy outside. So I feel like today would be a good Smiths song day.
Ooh. Okay.
You know, that's the way I used to feel on cloudy days. Like it was very, you know, new wave indie. Cure most of the times, or Susie and the Banshee was the best for me during a cloudy day or foggy, something like today.
Yeah, well, those are two of my favorites. I love them. And I've been listening to them now for decades, and they still don't get old to me. I love them.
No, they still don't. And I think that's Henry and I, we have this, you know, debate about, you know, Lady Gaga. And although I think that what she does is great, but I think that, you know, when you look at the Smiths or you look at, you know, the Cure, I can still play them now, and I can remember, like, first hearing them. I just, some of her songs, I'm just like, I don't think we're going to be going Judah, like, singing that song, like, 20 years from now, but I could be wrong, who knows, you know?
Yeah, I know, it's funny, I like to think that I'm in touch with youth culture, but sometimes I have conversations and realize that I just really don't have the same taste.
Well, you know, music and art defines the culture and generations. So, you know, if you're not born in this generation right now and growing up in it, it's not going to define you.
Yeah. I mean, my parents thought, and perhaps rightfully so, that Madonna was absolutely insipid. And I would never sort of try to argue her musical genius, because she certainly is not a great musician by any stretch of the imagination. But I always have loved her, and I think that she's an incredible performer. And I think that in terms of magnetism and just like star wattage, there's very few people in the world who come close to her. So I think that maybe that's the kind of feeling that young people have for Lady Gaga today. And I sort of forgive them for adoring her, even though I don't really find her that interesting. I would like to find her interesting. I just don't. And when people don't like Madonna, I don't begrudge them that, but you know, she's part of my youth and I love her you know, I think she's great.
Well, talking about music, I saw your website that, you know, you photograph a lot of musicians, and which I enjoyed really looking through. I was wondering, how'd you come about to photograph these musicians? Is this something that you wanted to do, or just it just fell in your lap?
Well, because
go
ahead.
You have people like Fall Out Boy, Adele, Migo there, and Bobby Joe, who I really don't know who she is, but that's a freaking fantabulous photograph.
thank you. Yeah, and Anthony from Anthony and Johnson's, and Peter, Bjorn, and John, and I don't.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them. I mean, I have to say, music has always been a really big part of my life, for sure. I mean, when I was a teenager growing up in Colorado, I didn't grow up in suburbia, but I definitely was a part of a very American and suburban culture, and all of the terror that sort of implies and brings with it. So our escape from that was music. And so it's always been very, very close to my heart. not so much popular music, but more sort of alternative music. And I really admire people who can, you know, get up on stage and bare their souls and do it in a really compelling way. And I, you know, I love the musicians. That's definitely probably the most interesting photographic work, I think. It's the most inspiring for me as a photographer to shoot musicians. I think actors tend to sort of put on a face, whereas musicians sometimes don't give a shit, or at least they pretend not to give a shit. And I, you know, I like them for being sort of a little more human. Yeah, music is a big part of my life, for sure.
Is there anyone, any musician you would like to, or doesn't even have to be a musician, somebody that you really, or some people that you really would like to shoot?
Oh, my God, are you kidding? The list goes on and on and on. I would love to shoot Morrissey.
Ooh, like how? Like in a sexy photo, or?
Yeah, it would be great to shoot him in a sexy way. I don't know.
I don't know if he would go for that, but.
Yeah. I feel like any sort of sexy shoot with Morrissey would end up being slightly comical. But yeah, Morrissey, I think, you know, one of my heroes on the music stage is Prince.
Oh, yeah.
That would be pretty amazing.
That would be pretty amazing.
I'd love to shoot.
That was Drew's muse while growing up.
Yeah, a lot of us, for sure. I mean, yeah.
Well, not for me, really. Like, I really, you know, I like the songs, but I don't know.
You don't love him, Henry?
I don't love him, but I really like his, you know, his earlier work. Like, I don't really get him. And I like his collaborations also.
Mm-hmm.
And he really, I started admiring him when I fell in love with Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You.
Mm.
And that sold me into Sinead O'Connor's artistry. And so it made me pay attention to Prince a lot more.
Right.
I mean, you know, I was a sad, depressed kid growing up at times. Well, most of the times, because I was bullied a lot growing up and picked on. And I just had issues. But, you know, when Doves Cry was like my theme song for like several years.
Yeah.
But him as an artist, I really didn't get him. You know, he was a little too racy, or I just wasn't feeling the bisexual vibe.
Huh, that's interesting. I always, he always just seemed like one of the most incredible performers on stage of anyone.
Yeah.
And again, that kind of like electric power. And then he also cultivated so expertly this very enigmatic air of mystery, and you couldn't really ever know what he was about or who he was, and that was always very appealing to me.
Yeah.
I think Michael Jackson was also very successful in that regard. You never really knew like what he was about. You know, I remember being a kid when Thriller came out, and just, I think I must have listened to that album like all day, every day for like, at least a year.
Did you have the jacket?
I totally had the jacket. I had I had the whole thing. I'd gotten the moonwalk down perfectly.
Oh, look at you. You had the singing loafers and the white socks.
Exactly. And I had like a little like white glove that I wore.
Right.
I camped out overnight to get tickets to
I've never seen Michael perform. I mean, one of my like childhood, well, one of my like tragic moments of my childhood was my brother actually won tickets to see Prince, and my mother refused for him to take me, and I was like, I cannot believe it. I was begging her, and she was like, no, you cannot go see him. And I was just like, and so he ended up taking his girlfriend at the time, who was like, you know, she was a Madonna clone and just like loved it. She didn't know any of the songs, and I was like, and so he came back telling me all these stories that she didn't want to be in it. I was like, are you just really trying to like kick me when I'm already down? Like, what's wrong with you?
Oh.
I did get to see him much later, but he's just amazing on the stage.
Yeah. Why wouldn't your mom let you go?
I don't know. Like, she just didn't give me any reason. She just did not want me to go. I don't know if she just didn't like him, or she thought I was maybe too young, or I have no idea.
She thought you were going to be, like, corrupted and like, seduced by
her. Little did she know, I was already corrupted. No, I mean, I was so, like, you know, growing up, I was a teenager. You know, I don't know. I have no idea. She just kind of, like, put her foot down. And usually, you know, my mom was pretty, like, you know, she would let me, you know, run amok and kind of, you know, do things as long as I was school and, you know, that kind of thing. But this was the one thing. It was like this concert was when she was like, oh, she wanted to put her foot down. I was like, now you want to, you know, assert your authority, like, now for Prince?
Right.
Are you kidding me?
Right. But I would have been
my
really
heart
upset.
You could tell I'm still a little bit bitter.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad you finally got to see him.
Yeah. Has there been have you had like a proudest moment in your career or life so far?
You know, I'm never really satisfied. I feel like, you know, I really am just, I still feel like a young photographer. I mean, I think I have a lot ahead of me. There's a lot of different projects that I'd like to pursue, and I feel a lot of creative frustration as an artist, and I don't think I've ever really, no, I haven't had that kind of moment. I've never really felt like I still at this point don't feel like I've accomplished very much, and then I really feel like I have a lot more to do. So, but this is, you know, this project has given me a certain degree of satisfaction for sure, and I hope to continue it. I would like to see it sort of develop into other things, like potentially a featured documentary or something like that.
Okay. Has there been a highlight of 2011 as we're almost the end of, we're getting close to the end of the year? Has there been a highlight within the gay community this year that has stood out for you?
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was really great when, day was it, June 20-something, it was Sunday, it was the day after the New York State Senate had passed the marriage equality bill, and Time magazine ran the project on their photo website, or their photo blog called Lightbox. And so it was Pride. It was Pride Sunday. It was the day after that historic vote, and you know, Queer Kids was up in front, and that was a great feeling just to know that it was, you know, a part of this sort of historic moment. And and it's, you know, I think it's gotten a lot of really great press, and hopefully it's done some, a little bit of consciousness raising. But yeah, I 2011 was for me the year of the Queer Kids, so I don't know what 2012 is going to be.
All right. And since we're talking about this in the end of the year, so Christmas is upon us. I have a fill in the blank. All I want for Christmas is blank. Maybe your boyfriend is listening.
My boyfriend is actually in China right now.
Okay.
No, he's not listening. All I want for Christmas. Wow, what is it that I want for Christmas? I feel like it would be greedy of me to ask for anything, because I just feel like I have so much and I've been so fortunate. But I would say, if anything, you know, continued success and health and happiness. And not just for me, but for all of my family and friends.
Right on.
So that's, I think, you know, asking for more than that would be selfish.
We have a section called People, Places, and Things that's new on our Chit for Chat section of our podcast. And this is where we kind of spit out random names and things and adjectives or what have you words, and just respond to them as, you know, whatever pops into your head, you know.
Wait, so this is sort of like an automatic association game?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, Krishna or Jesus Christ?
I have to say maybe Krishna, just because I love all of the sort of like hippy-dippy 60s music that goes along with it.
Okay, Nikon or Canon?
Well, seeing as I'm ready to ask Canon to endorse the project, I'm going to have to say Canon. And I am a Canon man because I shoot almost exclusively with Canons.
Oh, okay. If you were to walk by a homeless person and in New York City and they were just selling like their possessions or something they got from somewhere, and they were selling a iPhone or a PC laptop, which one would you go for?
Oh, the iPhone. It's actually very sad how much I love my iPhone. No doubt in my mind.
Okay, and if you were in a room alone with two porno actors, who would they be?
Who would they be?
Yes.
You know, I don't... There's very few porno actors that I know by name. do I know any by name? There is that. There is this one really hunky porno star named Leo that I think is really hot. I have no idea what his last name is. You're asking the wrong guy. Not that I've never watched porn. I don't really know actors by name.
You're not watching it for the stars. I mean, for their names.
Exactly.
If you another question. Condoms are to trees as trees are to what?
Condoms are to trees?
As trees are to what?
Wow. Rubber tree. Gosh. Where does that even come from?
Whatever pops into your head, just throw it out.
Condoms are to trees. What trees are to, I don't know. I'm at a loss. I mean, I'm thinking of like a rubber tree, but maybe it's still too early. I did drink too much last night. Am I missing something?
Okay.
Am I missing something?
No, you're supposed to like spit out whatever, just pops
right
into your head.
It's a
really like, you know, there's no right or wrong.
give me the next one.
Okay, the next one is, if you were in a cat fight, would you use, what would you use? Would you use a pump or would you use a lead pipe?
A pump or a lead pipe?
Yes.
Like a pump as an issue?
Oh my God. A leather or a lead pipe? If I was in a cat fight, wow, I mean, definitely a stiletto. Remember, there's that great scene in Single White Female where, who is it, Ally Sheedy or someone, like, sticks a stiletto through someone's eye?
Yes.
Okay, one last question. If you had to do a puppet from the Muppets, who would it be?
If I had to do one?
Yeah.
I mean, Miss Piggy has always been a huge hero of mine.
Mm. Have you shot Miss Piggy?
I haven't, but I would love to.
Okay.
I would love to. If you know how that can happen, please let me know, because she's, like, the best. She's actually having a little bit of a renaissance right now.
She is. She's been everywhere. She's been in, like, Inside Magazine. She's done, like, a whole, like, fashion spread of her. Like, she's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. She deserves it. She's great. And, I mean... How old is she? She looks great.
She must be 40 years old.
She's gonna be older than 40, maybe even. Because, I mean, I was watching The Muppets when I was in single digits, and she was already, like, you know, an established star.
Yeah.
She's I would say she's in her 60s.
But she has that good, I mean, she has that good, that good plastic surgery, I guess. Or maybe she doesn't, or maybe Piggy has that, you know, that saying of, you know, the black don't crack, maybe the same thing for
right.
So
I have one final question, and it's not part of People, Places, the Things. I was just interested in knowing, you know, if I'm sure you, there are some other photographers that influence you, but is there someone that you, is actually your muse, or that you really?
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of photographic influences for sure in my life, and I try to sort of you know, learn and take from all different kinds of photographers what I can. But who are some of my all-time favorite photographers? I mean, I kind of, you know, I love Avedon. I love Nan Golden. I love this sort of, he's actually a New Yorker, but he lives in South Africa now. His name is Roger Ballen. This great, I think he's Australian photographer, and it's not Jim Henson, it's Bill Henson. I mean, there's a ton of really spectacular photographic work that has been made in the past few decades. And the medium just keeps getting pushed and pushed further and further. It'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, with the sort of dawn of digital media and making it so easily accessible to most people.
Do you know by any chance Chiang Kai-shek?
No, say it again.
Chiang Kai-shek, Chunky. He's a big GQ fashion photographer.
I don't know him.
He works for Condé Nast. He's a friend of mine that I grew up with in high school.
I don't know his
he does
work. I don't.
Okay.
You know, I continue to shoot for magazines, but it's rare that I actually pick one up and look at it. I get so much of my information today from the web, and I'm not terribly interested in fashion, to be honest.
you're gonna have your gay card revoked, Michael.
Yeah, I know. It is a little bit like that, though. I've never really been too terribly interested in it. I'm kind of
I just asked because he lives in the city, and I, you know, we grew up practically in high school together, and he's, you know, he's in the scene, and he knows Amanda Lepore, and I saw that, you know, you've taken some photographs of Amanda also.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I remember. It was funny. I was telling a couple of the queer kids that were over last night. I went on a date, a Valentine's Day date with Amanda Lepore once.
Many years
ago, we went to Lucky Chang's, and I was her date for Valentine's Day.
Wow, that's funny. I first saw Amanda Lepore like at B Bar, and this was before she was like a singer, and yeah, but she was still Amanda Lepore, and she was on this like kind of like wooden box, and she was making balloon animals, but it was like she took like 5 hours to make it. She's making this balloon animal, and you're like, what is she doing? And then you're like, okay, what is it going to be? What is it going to be? And then like 2 hours later, she's like, it's a dog. Like, what is going on? What is happening right now? Like, where am I? But it was amazing.
Yeah, somehow she's been able to turn that sort of like semi lobotomized character into glamour. Lobotomy glamorous.
And she shows up everywhere. Like there could be a magazine, and you're like, what is a man to the point right here? Like, yeah, it's amazing. Like, she's really.
Oh, no, she'll go to the opening of an envelope.
Oh no, you didn't.
God bless her.
Are you still in touch with her?
I'm not in touch with her, no, but you know, I do see her out occasionally. I mean, we have a lot of sort of mutual friends. I did assist La Chapelle momentarily, and then a lot of those transsexuals from the 90s, you know, I knew quite well and photographed them for a long time. So there was Ivy Bjork, Sophia Lamar, Candace Kane. So all those girls are old friends of mine.
Yeah, I love Sophia Lamar. Like, she's like, I love her. I think she's amazing.
Yeah, I've taken some pretty incredible photographs of Ms. Lamar.
You know, I noticed that you have, in your portrait section of your website, in your gallery, there's someone by the name Jojo. Is that Jojo, the Jojo from Boy Power?
Jojo. I mean, I've known Jojo for as long as I've lived in New York City.
Okay, I was wondering. I mean, I saw some photos in that one video. I think you called it Transit Party. It's right after Queer Kids.
Maybe
I don't have the website up.
Take It to Fantastic.
Take It to Fantastic, yeah. And there were some pictures there. Like, there was a lot of party pictures, but there was some that kind of looked like it was JoJo, like, up on stage with his rock band.
It very well could have been. I used to go to Squeezebox.
Okay.
So, like, back when Squeezebox was a thing, back in the early 90s, you know, I would go as much as I possibly could. And I got to know all those kids. Miss Guy, Lily of the Valley, JoJo, I can't think of who, I mean, Lady Bunny, who I still worship and adore.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I've been around for a little while. And you know, New York is like that. It's a giant city, but at the same time, it feels like a tiny little town.
Yeah, it's like that 6 degrees of separation kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, yeah, that's about it, right?
Yeah, thank you so much, Michael, for doing this and, you know, and talking about Queer Kids and also letting our listeners and for us to get a chance to get to know you a little better, the man behind the lens.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Thanks for, for discovering the project. And two, for inviting me on the show. I really enjoyed myself. I have one last really distasteful joke, which I thought of, or which I thought would be appropriate for the Oral Fix podcast.
Go ahead.
What is the worst thing you could possibly hear while giving Willie Nelson a blowjob?
Oh, no. Don't cry for me, Argentina.
I'm not Willie Nelson.
Oh.
We love dry humor here.
Yeah, I was just, my mouth is still open, just trying to picture, like, would I be giving Willie Nelson, like, have I really stooped that low that I'm giving Willie Nelson a blowjob? Like, has my life up to that point? Like, am I, like, really, like, down on my luck that I'm just, like, giving blowjobs to old men? Like, is that really where I'm at in my life? Am I that close? I know we're in a recession and all, but damn.
I thought that was a good one.
Dylan, thank you for sharing. And hopefully I'll see you around the neighborhood.
No, we definitely, I mean, you should give me a ring or email me and we'll totally grab a coffee or get a drink or something. I'd love to hear more about your life in the city.
Yes, well, we'll definitely need a few drinks for that.
Well, the house here always has a, you know, at least one bottle of bourbon open, so.
Oh, okay. And when does your boyfriend come back?
When's the boyfriend come back?
Yeah, he's come.
That's very funny.
He's gone for a few more days.
He's away in China.
He is in China. He is on business in China for the next few days. He'll be back this weekend.
Oh, okay. So that's good. We should not, you're not. Yeah.
But you're more than, both of you are more than welcome anytime. I would love to have you. Where, Drew, you said you're in the sticks? What is that? Where is that?
No, Henry's in the sticks.
Henry's in the sticks. Where are you?
I live in a town called Warwick in Orange County, New York.
Where is that?
That's most people don't know, but some people associate it with that Cher movie with the three witches, the Witches of...
Eastwick.
Witches of Eastwick?
Yeah, but... It's not that area, but though there are a lot of witches up here.
But how far away from the city are you?
I'm about an hour and a half, depending on traffic. It could be like an hour and 15 minutes.
Just north of the city?
Yeah, I'm in northern Hudson Valley, like right before you hit the Catskills area.
Are you on the east or west side of the Hudson?
West.
Okay, that's why I'm not familiar with it, because I'm sort of... more familiar with stuff on the east side of the Hudson. But yeah, that must be beautiful up there.
It is. I live right in front of a Nine Mile Lake, and there's mountains and you know, right behind the lake, and you know, in the morning there's a really pretty sunrise and there's a moonrise there, and right now it's foggy, and it you know, when I first moved here it was very much like northern exposure, and now it's getting a little more populated. It's, you know, it's starting to wake up because it used to be a sleepy mm-hmm. town, and you don't see so much deer on the road or bear coming to greet you at your car door in the parking lot.
Right. Which I would not like. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of bears.
Well, the bears here are not the same.
But we're talking about, animals, not the bears within the gay community, right?
Yeah.
We don't want any angry letters. We don't want any hate mail.
Yes, I'm talking about the wildlife.
The wildlife.
No, the wildlife are the people here, and yeah, I mean, when I first moved here, like, I'm American Indian, and my hair when I moved here was up to my shoulder, and I had a goatee. You know, there's a Sephardic Spanish influence in there in my bloodline, so they thought that I was when I went to do my groceries like a week after 9/11 had happened. The person at the register asked me and my tribal brother if we were from over there, and we were like, where? And she's like, from over there. And mind you, we had like a mile-long line behind us waiting, you know, to check out. And she got everyone interested in knowing where we were from. So she kept on asking, and we were kind of like baffled because we're like colorblind, you know? We don't know what she's talking about. And so by the third time she asked it, we were like, oh. So we said, you mean from over there, from the Middle East? And she was like, yeah. And we were like, no. We both said it synchronistically, and she let out this big sigh of relief. And everyone else, you can hear it in the on the line, also let out that sigh of relief.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just really like, you know.
Yeah, you don't expect to be in such close proximity with one of the most cosmopolitan places in the world.
Well, you know, Michael, I and Drew, you know, as you've seen it on our bio, we've done a lot of nonprofit work, and we've worked majorly with real big organizations down in the city. I even was a liaison to, well, not even a liaison, I was a human rights commissioner as a youth. For the youth community in New York City. So we got to travel, I and Drew, a lot everywhere, especially abroad outside of the United States. So we got to see, like, a lot of different places. You know, I've been to Iowa, Idaho. I haven't been to Denver, Colorado, but I've been out west coast to San Francisco. And I've seen a lot of openness, and it's changed my – it did change my perception about, you know, how people – are racist, or even the white community. You know, I didn't feel or see that, but when I moved up here, I saw a lot of it, and I was like, "Hold the fuck, you know, where am I?"
Yeah, that's too bad. But you know, I think that as well as homophobia is on the decline, and this new generation is definitely more progressive in their thinking and in their politics. So,
well, I don't know if it's, you know, on a real big decline, but it is, you know, seeing that we have now national support, and especially from the government. When I saw that It Gets Bitter video was actually, they made a page specially on the government, you know, the US government website, that's when I started really feeling like, you know, there is some hope that we're going to be taken seriously on a national level.
Yeah.
And that's going to send a message. I mean, I think once gay marriage is federally recognized, I think that will mark it for me that, you know, homophobia is on a real big decline, that it's going to be eradicated.
Yeah. And I think that is the future. You know, I think DOMA will be repealed, and we will join the rest of the civilized world, or at least, you know, big chunks of the civilized world that don't pay attention to sexual orientation, or don't try to politicize sexual orientation.
Yeah.
And so it's a matter of time. I think you know, I think people are working really hard, fighting really hard for our rights, and the fight is paying off. So it's I feel optimistic about it.
You know, I came from the ACT UP and Queer Nation generation. Well, I joined that generation when it became really strong in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I've been around a lot of people who've been around doing activism for a very long time, so I've heard a lot of stories, and I've done, you know, my research also growing up, so I tend to be very guarded when it comes to, like, prophesizing the future.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I think that anything could happen. We definitely have some real nut jobs vying for positions of power today. but I think that, you know, for the most part, you know, as I said before, it's really about the new generation. And I think that, you know, they are much more open to, you know, different ways of being and all kinds of diversity. I mean, I think it's sort of like, I don't want to say that we live in a post-race society, because obviously we don't, but there will come a time when it's impossible to distinguish just by sight what sort of ethnic background someone is from. And that will sort of necessitate a different attitude towards ethnicity. And I think that already is happening here in New York City, for sure. It feels very, very, I don't want to say racially integrated, but it feels very, you know, exceptionally diverse, and I would even say uniquely diverse in terms of a metropolis anywhere on the globe. You know, I think we're really in a privileged position to live here in such a, I don't want to say race blind, but I feel sort of, you know, I feel a little race blind. It's certainly not the first thing that crosses my mind, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I may sort of think of it as a cultural interest when I meet someone, but that's just because maybe I've been to their country of origin and I want to have a conversation with them about it. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, gay rights is a little bit like that. Eventually, there's just going to be too much gender diversity, and homosexual relationships will be abundant, and there's just, I don't think you can really turn back the hands of time. I mean, I think you can slow them, and occasionally, you know, you do take one step forward and two steps back, but for the most part, you know, time marches on, and people do evolve, and you can't erase the Enlightenment. I mean, it really is that simple. I understand your cautious optimism, and I think that that's good, but I think it still is optimism.
And how can folks who can, how can they view the view Queer Kids, the project, or if they want to get involved, or like, where can they?
Yeah, no, please. I would love people to see it. I mean, you can always see it on Facebook. It's Facebook.com/QKUSA, as in Queer Kids USA. And then the project exists, of course, on my own website, which is just michaelsharkey.com.
Okay.
And people are more than welcome to contact me. They can email me. Email is definitely the best way to get in touch with me, and I'd love to continue shooting the project. And then if you want to, you know, if you are the administrator or director of an organization that wants to showcase the project in some way, please feel free to contact me.
Well, we'll also put all of your links in our show notes so people can be able to have that as well.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. That was Florence and the Machine, Rabbit Heart, and that was the Lionheart remix. So, as we had mentioned in our previous podcast, that we were going to be going on a short hiatus for the holidays. So, I know you're going to be all sad and teary-eyed, but we will be back.
Yes, next we will
year
be back.
With back in 2012 with, you know, some special guests as well as some a new and improved oil fix. And we want to thank everyone who has, you know, who has visited us on our blog and who's been listening to us. Thank you all. We wish you happy holidays and a happy new year and all
happy
that good
holidays.
Stuff.
Happy new year.
So thank you very much. And again, you can still check us out at oilfixpodcast.com. We would probably still be posting some doing blog posts, you know, from time to time during throughout the holidays or throughout the week, so you can still check out our blog. You can feel free to email us at oilfixpodcast@gmail.com. We're really trying to build up our Facebook fans, so please head over to Facebook and hit like at facebook.com/TheOilFix Podcast. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Oil Fix Podcast, so you can do that as well. And, you know, your feedback or you have any questions or if you need advice about anything or you just want to say, hey, just drop us a line. We would love to hear from you. And it's definitely appreciated. So on that note, we are going to say goodbye until 2012. Do you have any closing?
Yeah. My sentiments are the same. I just hope it's going to be very safe, especially during New Year's, especially if you're in New York City and you're thinking about going to Times Square. Be careful of pepper spray. It seems like everybody's carrying pepper spray lately. Yeah, everyone have fun. And please, you know, if you can donate anything, you know, on our donation buttons, go click that button. Okay? Okay. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to leave you with some music and also want to give a very special thanks to Michael Sharkey, who took time out of his day to do this interview.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
And who also, as you know, lives in Brooklyn, so he's a Brooklynite, and he's just a really cool guy. So a big thank you to him. So we definitely, it was a nice kind of send-off for us. So to continue, to end this episode, we're going to leave you with some music. And this is Sexy Saturn by Bix. So again, happy holidays to all and enjoy the tune. We'll be right back.